Hello and welcome back to another podcast on international development. My name is Yilun and this week we're going to talk a bit about growth. I think within the field of international development, there is this implicit assumption that development means growth, right? So we think of growth in terms of GDP, GDP per capita. We think about the growth in income levels and, you know, the decrease in poverty measured by how much the median income has risen for people. And it's all measured in very roughly, you know, quantitative and numerical measures of wealth. And in some ways, it does a very good job because these are, you know, the rough and hard figures of trying to understand development in very much economic terms. But I think there has also been lots of kickback in measuring development purely in terms of growth as defined as, you know, economic growth. And this often comes, you know, from the global south where they see, you know, the pure pursuit of growth leading to unsustainable practices or great ecological and environmental damages. It shows that there are some costs that economic growth is not very well at capturing. And there's a different side to it, which looks at the question more positively. So instead of what costs pursuing growth has incurred, but also what are some things that growth simply cannot capture per se. And for a lot of people, this would be, you know, if I'm growing at 5%, but that means lots of people are experiencing great injustice in how the wealth is being distributed and it's creating great ingrained inequalities within society that itself perpetuates to greater injustice to the social relations within society, then growth alone is unable to capture what we really mean by development. And you see this in a lot of different countries around the world, where there are different understandings of what development is meant to do beyond growth, right? In the Andes, people have an understanding of development as buen vivir, which means, you know, good living, which is completely different from, if I may, our Western understanding of development as growth. And if you go to Bhutan, where people understand development as, you know, this gross national happiness, it is another slightly heterodox, perhaps very much heterodox, way of understanding development that tries to incorporate more holistic understandings of what development is meant to capture. You know, at the end of the day, we're all trying to live a more fulfilling life as human beings, and that should be the end goal of growth. Sorry, not growth, but of development. And so this ripple effect has captured its audience definitely in Western academia. And today, I'm very thankful to have Giacomo De Lisa, one of the founding thinkers of the degrowth movement, which is itself quite a catching term of trying to understand development as beyond growth.
Good morning, I'm Giacomo De Lisa. I am a FST postdoc at the University of Coimbra with a project on commons. But I am also a founding member of Research and Degrowth, that is a civil society organization that tries to bridge knowledge between science and society, and so having impact on policies, and but also to join social movements to toward a better and fairer society, a more sustainable one. Currently, I'm also director at the Universidad Autónoma of Barcelona of a master on political ecology, and we are running the fourth edition of this master.
Could you tell us a bit more about what you mean by degrowth?
Degrowth means many different things, let's say. Of course, means, first of all, a critics to towards the growth machine that we are embodied in. And so in this sense, it's based on a diagnosis of the actual socioeconomic system and the predicaments that it creates. The growth aims to promote and acting for ecological sound and socially equitable societies. So in this sense, it's also has also a let's say a parse constraint, so something in terms of not only how to say, no, not only, it's not only a matter of criticism, but it's also a matter of envisioning the kind of society that we want to live in. So degrowth is somehow, in a very simple way, built around the common sense, according to which people should live simply to allow the others can, that others can simply live. Because the way in which, on the contrary, the growth system is developed, making possible the life of many, of too many on the world. So in this sense, is contrasting this idea of this common sense that is predicated in the growth society, in which in order to stay well, you need more, or in order to stay better, you need more and more, is predicated on this other common sense. So live simply so the others can simply live. And in this sense, it's a matter not only of giving space, a material space to others, so to other way of life, but also ontological space, so way of life. So thinking of a different way to stay in this world that we share.
So what are some of the problems with pursuing growth as it is now?
Well, we can discuss about the problem and the predicaments of growth economy from a different point of view. No? First of all, now we are in 2022. It's 50 years from the very famous and very much contested book on the limits to growth, 1972, right? In this book, for example, one of the problems that was highlighted by the authors, led by me, but one of the person that lead these studies, was used to make their analysis using the same macroeconomic model, mathematical model that growth economists use, and they were showing that according to this model, there were problems in terms of sustainability of growth in the long run, right? So they were analyzing five main variables. One was population, one was non-renewable energy, one was food production, and so on. And they showed that around 2030, one of these variables, if not all together with a cascade system, would have collapsed, right? And this create this debate about the problem of growth in the long run. Okay, so there is a problem in terms of model, no? This analysis was done just 1 year after another important book for ecological economists was also published. There was a book of Georgescu Regan, no? And there was speaking about bioeconomics and the fact that socioeconomic system should respect the law of entropy, okay? So the fact that the increase in the intense use of energy materials increased the entropic process of the system. So in this sense, we have one of the problem is with the model, let's say, no? Another problem is related to the biophysical aspect of our economy. What I mean there? I mean, with all those discourses about peak of materials, of course, the most well-known is about the peak oil. That means that not, it doesn't mean that oil is finishing, but it means that oil is always more and more costly in terms of extraction, okay? And this create a huge problem because we know that oil is basically the most important engine for the growth economy and the growth of nations. We know now, after many discussion about the peak oil, that there are many other materials that are peaking, no? Indeed, there are there is a book of Hugo Bardi called "The Peak of Everything," no? That speaks about all the materials that are very important and core metals, for example, for the economy that are now creating that has problem in terms of cost extraction of this material. We know that these imply also geopolitical problems. Indeed, when some metals or some energy is very important, we know that it creates a discussion that ended up in possible war around the extraction of this material, no? And this is another, let's say, another problem that is related to the growth machine of a national economy. Another problem is related, so this was an example of the biophysical aspect. No, of course, the biophysical aspect in terms of extraction has also a different biophysical manifestation. The most well-known, of course, is nowadays the CO2 emission equivalent, so the fact that we are, as a system, as a whole, we participating in the growth economy are producing too much of carbon if we confront this with the capacity of the Earth to absorb part of them, no? Then we know that also a part of this very well-known issue, environmental issue, there are others that are less discussed but are also very important. No? One is the loss of biological diversity all around the world, overshooting of ozone absorption, and the problem with the cycle of nitrogens and so on. I mean, so this aspect in terms of extraction, but also in terms of sink, we have a lot of problem with the growth economy. Another issue is something related to we can say that the capitalist component of it. So and we know that in capitalist system there is a tendency to the concentration of capital and wealth in very few hands. Nowadays, after 2 years and of pandemic, this huge concentration of wealth is even more evident. We know that the very top rich people in the world have concentrated in their hands a lot of wealth and money. That something that was even unthinkable some years ago. We can think about, for example, Elon Musk, not the owner of many important industry nowadays, very well known also for in the ecology camp because of the Tesla and his hydrogen cars. But for example, he has, according to Forbes rank, he has been able to concentrate in his hand this year as much wealth as the fifth richest person in the world in 1 year. So it means that he earned, and we know this, that it's a huge amount. In 1 year, he was able to concentrate in his hand the same amount of patrimony that the CEO of Google has. So imagine how much money we are thinking of, or we can think of in terms of concentration. It means that if someone is winning this process of concentration, well, many are losing. And this is true if you look at working class people, for example, since the 50s, already they were losing, well, since the 60s already in USA, for example, they were losing part of the share of the national economy or income production in USA. In Europe, this tendency to decrease their share started in Europe around the middle of the 70s, so a little bit later. It's also true that, for example, in Europe, the redistribution of wealth is fairer if you compare to the USA, for example. But still, I mean, the fact that in the last years, this inequity issue is increasing much more is, again, is an example of the problems that the growth economy create. Last that I want to underline is about the unjust and unfair redistribution of what the feminists have called the unpaid work that the person do in order to maintain the welfare of the system they were participating in, no? They are participating in. In this sense, we know that unpaid work is mainly done by women, and this is also an important issue that has to be considered. So the model in this sense has, the growth economy has a problem in terms of models, in terms of biophysical predicaments, in terms of unequal distribution of wealth, but also in terms of gender distribution of unpaid reproductive activities, just to synthesize a little bit.
So how exactly does degrowth want to deal with these problems from a policy perspective?
Yeah, from a policy perspective, we, as degrowthers, we are trying to, first of all, to envision the way in which the degrowth society could look like. So it means we promote a lot of activities that are already from different lands, from a different motivation, are already developed all around the world, no? That are a community-based organization for sufficiency, but also for production that are embodied, let's say, in local communities, arrangement, and so on. So, first of all, it's very important for us to perform the kind of life and the kind of society that we envision, right? Exactly, to this is important to give a life to what I was saying at the beginning, no? This idea of new common senses that create a different way to share our resources and wealth fairly, no? But at the same time, as you were saying, we also push for important policies, and these policies, the locus of the enforcement of these policies are state apparatuses and agency at different level, of course, no? There are policies that can be implemented at municipal level, other at regional level, and others at national level. That also, according to the diversity of the sides of different nations all around the world, will imply different kind of struggle, no? Political struggle. In this sense, for example, and related to the last two issues that I was raising in terms of problems for the growth economy, that was inequality in terms of redistribution of wealth, but also inequality in terms of unpaid work. We have been pushing for what we call the universal care income. That means a universal redistribution to the people. Well, this ideally will be done at national level, let's say. So all the citizens of a specific nation will receive an income, but this income is universal but differentiated in the sense that we know that, for example, women contribute more to unpaid work, so they will receive proportionally more than a man of the same ages. Okay, so in this sense, the universal care income is very similar to the universal basic income. So it's a universal redistribution of minimum income to many, to all the people belonging to a specific nation, but it's not done on liberality. So in the sense that the people should receive this money because this is conceived as a human rights, no? A human rights that guarantee the access to a normal life and to everybody, but it's more predicated on a different issue. No? What we want to underline is that already all the people, even if in a way that is differentiated according to the gender, according to the age, contribute to the welfare of the people through unpaid work. So there is a lot of work that is not is not accounted for, but is very important for our welfare. And so in this sense, we would like to redistribute this income, this universal care income, on the basis of the work that we already do for the society. In this sense, is a push to visibilize all the reproductive and care work that people do, and to visibilize the fact also that this care work is done mainly by women. And so this redistribution should be also, first of all, to recognize the amount of work that they are doing, no? With the hope that this visibilization will allow for new kind of redistribution that will be fairer across gender. Okay, so in this sense, with this policy, for example, we would like to address at least two aspects of the problem that I was underlined. So the redistribution of wealth, but same time also the unfair redistribution of reproductive and care work in the society. This is just an example. Of course, we have many other policies that we also push forward.
So I guess in some ways then, it's not necessarily a focus on getting negative growth that degrowth is really predicated on. It's more about understanding development in a more holistic and global manner, which incorporates aspects of justice and sustainability into it. Is this intuition correct?
Yes, it's perfect, I will say, because, you know, negative growth is recession, has a specific name. And of course, in a society of growth, to have a recession is a disaster. And we are not claiming for a disaster. We are claiming for reorganizing, rethinking, debunking the idols that growth economy has make core in our imagination and personal desire and wishes, but also at the core of political economy, the economic decision. We, as a degrowther, of course, we are against, well, we want to debunk these idols and desire and show all the problems that they created. But basically, when we ended up in promoting a different political vision and political economy policies, what we want is to think of different kind of target, different kind of objective, and a different organization. Of course, it will imply, because of, for example, the biophysical predicaments that I was speaking about, that we need to shrink the social metabolic profile of industrialized society. This is important, but what we also have to challenge again is the individualistic mentality that make this increase of industrialized system possible. That what does it mean? Basically, there is this idea in liberal economy that each individual has the right to mobilize whatever resources he or she thinks is is necessary for making possible his or her desire and wishes. And I think this is also something that we have to challenge, no? Because and this is can be simply visibilized, no? We know that, for example, Jeff Bezos, when he was young, he was dreaming to go to the space, and he was a fan of Star Trek. He liked a lot of this idea of humanity going into the space and so on. So finally, he ended up to create this huge patrimony, and he also create the Blue Origin, that is new, the company that he founded to go to the space. No? And it's this is very problematic, no? Because he's trying to realize his own desire when there are plenty of people on the world that cannot even make possible to meet their own needs, more important needs. And this is what we should also limit it, no? Create a sense of limits to the personal desire, because this creates a lot of problems. No. We should remember that basically he was going to the space when there were people, billion of people, that because of COVID wouldn't even move out of their house. And it's also interesting to see that now we used to normally speak about the metaphor of a cowboy linear economy that create this industrialized system. And sometimes now also the people that support this idea of circularity are saying, no, we should move out of this linear cowboy economics that was the founding obsession of westernized capitalist economy. But it's pretty interesting to see that when Jeff Bezos went out of his spaceship, once landed on Earth again, he was wearing a cowboy hat, no? So the kind of imaginary that is still trying to push is this idea of the limits as boundaries that we have to overcome, and we are going to conquer whatever is the land that we need, if this land promises to give us resources for making possible our own wishes and desires. And I think this is also part of what we challenge, this idea of legitimacy of doing whatever you want as individual.
Yeah, I definitely really resonated with that point about just how we have this really individualized market system, and it's a really go get it. If you get something, it's because you deserve it. And it's all based on this false concept of merit and based on individualism. And that kind of kicks away the morality that you have when you say, oh, if I just go to Starbucks and get this really, really cheap coffee, which shouldn't really cost as much, then it's fine because, you know, people are selling it, other people are buying it. And so I guess degrowth is kind of trying to instill back this sense of justice and ethics, and I guess in some ways the sense of community into the market system, right?
Yeah, Zilun. Yeah, you are right. Most of us, for example, the one that founded the research and degrowth in Barcelona, we are indeed coming from the environmental justice scholarship. We were looking at this multidimensional aspect of growth economy, and the fact that, for example, nowadays is now speaking from Europe, of course we know that European policymakers now are predicating a lot this idea of circular economy, but for example they completely hide the aspect of the extraction of material that are needed for the circularity of Europe, create a huge environmental disaster and injustice across the world, no? Where these resources are coming from. So indeed, there is an issue that it's very core to also to degrowth, is to to make visible again these environmental injustices that normally are invisibilized when you just want to describe the economy in terms of monetary valuation. No? On the contrary, when other criteria come to be legitimized in the representation of a societal system or of a system of production, then I think you are making something very useful that normally economic representation cannot do, because they simplify and they try to put only in number things that are not commensurable, no? In terms, and they cannot be translated just in economic valuation.
Right. I actually wanted to press you a little bit about how degrowth is going to tackle the question of environmental sustainability, because I know within our society, there's lots of people who are really interested in aspects of ecological justice and just resources in general. And I think one big point that I guess modern day policymakers who are not really in the vein of degrowth try to do is, oh, we got to just use the price system and add taxes, make things that are unsustainable more expensive. How does the approach of degrowth differ from this price-based mechanism from our day-to-day understanding of taxes and so on?
Yeah, this is pretty related with what we were discussing before, in the sense that if everything can be, even if you want to admit that we don't, that every process can be reduced or translated in monetary indicators, money, or with a price, that we always have a problem in terms of redistribution. No, if something that make possible to access or not to a services that is needed for a community, for a person, for different kind of people across the world, it means that those that they don't have enough money, they will not access to it. Okay, so the problem of price create the issue of redistribution, and we know that the market economy create huge inequality in terms of economic distribution. So if everything is done through the mediation of price, then many people will be kicked out of many services. No, and as European, just to confront two very industrialized system, no, the westernized Europe and the westernized USA, that have different kind of policies related to, let's say, university, no, education in general, or health. We know that there are much more people struggling for accessing to the basic education process in USA than in Europe, in which many countries, luckily enough, because of the struggle that different political subject did in the past in Europe, there is universal access to health in some countries, there is universal access to education, to the basic education and so on, so in which the price don't really give you the information, no? To the family, I mean, to decide if they are going to send to a school their child. So this is an aspect that is very important. So we are against this idea of creating a system in which the price will give all the information to a subject to make decisions, okay? Because we think, first of all, that this, even if it will be possible, and we believe that it's not, because there's not a clear possibility to create a right price, right? It will create inequality, okay? because of the tendency to different the redistribution accumulation process in the market capitalist economy. This redistribution creates injustice in terms of access to the basic needs, like I was saying before, no education, health, and many others.
Right. So what is your prediction about how successful degrowth will be in our current political climate, and with all, you know, very vested interests by the big corporations to continue things as they are?
This is very difficult, but I will say before, it's important to understand that we need to have to be pessimist in terms of rationality, but optimist in terms of will. No, this is something that have been said by many people in Europe. Historically, have been very core for making political advancement towards a more just society. So in this sense, of course, if we just stay in the rational pessimist aspect of it, we cannot really see many hope, no? But same time, I think that many people always have this aspect of positivist will, according to which they are moved to challenge things that they feel and they sense are very much unjust. For example, and sometimes even if we used to say that in the last period, at least in Europe, there is not very much strength in social movement, and that have been part of our historical ability to change and to make our society more fairer. It's always difficult not to predict what will happen. I think many people now sense this aspect that we were discussing about are very problematic. The issue of redistribution, the issue of environmental predicaments, and so on. And for example, the movement that Greta Thunberg was also able to create, it's an example of what something that is not so clear or is unpredictable can really make things happen. No, if a person thinks of the slowness of the practice of Greta at the beginning, you know, you just make a strike the Friday alone on a stage in front of the parliament and so on. And what you create just some month after, million people going around, it was impossible to think about this. I say, this is too slow in terms of what we need. It doesn't really make sense. But finally, it created a huge movement. Why? Because I think Greta was symbolizing something that some common senses that people already were feeling in, and were some expectation that were already discussed in many different circles and so on. They just make this possible to manifest it in huge kind of reivindication and claim. So I think there are many things going on nowadays in small circle, probably in slow practices, in everyday performance of what make us feel participating in a juster and more sustainable futures. And probably there will be at one point a manifestation that we will make will create the event for the confluence of all this activity, and something really important can happen. This is what I think. So even if up to now many of the practices are really invisible to if one look at the global aspect of it. I think that there is a plurality of thousands of different manifestation and performativity of society and community economy that are more just and more sustainable, that really are the proper material to make also this a push for a political transformation. This is very difficult to of course, to predict, but we can see that there are signals all around. No, for example, this is, I was making the example of Greta Thunberg, but from an environmental point of view, but from a political transformation point of view, of course, all the things that are now happening, for example, in Chile after the revolution, that were coming from the students' demonstration some years ago. Now, one of the leaders of the students is now the youngest prime minister in Chile, in the history of Chile. This is also something that would be with a lot of difficulty to predict with any specific model system. But you can sense and feel that something different is happening. No? Nowadays, of course, in these days, many of us are worried about this Russian Western countries issue about Ukraine. And of course, this is something that has to worry us a lot. But who can predict which kind of pacifist movement will emerge in case actual current political leader will make the wrong decision about this, you know? I'm sure that many people in Europe, just to stay on the camp that are closer to us, will really demonstrate against a war in Ukraine. And we don't know what kind of movement and the political transformation this demonstration will create, no? The important thing is to be prepared. I mean, I know that you started with this question about corporation. Corporation are systems that with all the power and monetary power that they have, of course, they are very much prepared to the changes, as we have experienced during the pandemic, for example. We know during the pandemic, there was a huge mobilization of community help, mutual help at the beginning. A lot of articles were describing in many newspapers of community activity to create a network of self-help for masks, for making shopping possible for the elderly and so on, no? But we know that finally the great response came from the corporation. Things of like corporation that was almost not known before the pandemic. That is, for example, the owner of the platform that we are using, Zoom. Now they enter in the 50 most rich people just because of his ability to offer a tool for the people that were needed in that moment to move to the virtual debating from the presential one. So, I mean, that's another issue of preparedness. We need to be prepared, no? More and more in terms of ability to be mobilizer actor, but also to be people participating in activity that can produce products and services that are important for their communities.
Great, I think we've got everything that we needed. That was really, really insightful. And I'll just get you a link once this gets released on our Spotify account. This is really, really great. Thank you so much.
Okay, thank you very much to you and to your association. It's again, I think it's very important what the young students do in the university. They have a very important role for the transformation that is needed. So good luck for everything and for your all small things that you also do in your everyday practices.